So the fire this week got me thinking about places that I have lived in Southern California, some places that have been affected by the fires. And I know talking to some of you before the service this morning, you've had similar thoughts about places that you loved and either in danger or have been on fire this week. And I was thinking about an apartment building that I lived in back when I was around 18, 19, 20, just right south of Sunset Boulevard. And that got me thinking about a woman named Olga. Now, the first time I met Olga, I was playing my music a little too loud in my apartment. The apartment building was one of those 1920s courtyard type buildings that you find so often in Los Angeles. And the building was tired by the time I moved in, and I think most of the residents were pretty tired as well. So I'd seen this woman several times before, and she always walked to the grocery store on the corner, and she had a scarf tied around her head, and my friends would ask me, they'd say, "Who's that woman that never smiles, that's always out there?" And so one day I was cleaning my apartment. I had the music on really loud, and not realizing that it was echoing through that little building with the thin walls. And I heard this knock at my door. So I opened the door, and there this woman stood, no smile, as usual. And she says, "Those sounds too much." "Sorry," I said. I didn't realize. It won't happen again. "Well, I'm Jason, by the way." I stuck out my hand. She didn't take it, but she did nod and say, "Olga," and then she stalked off. So for the next few weeks, whenever she passed to go to the grocery store, I would wave, but she would never wave back. But she did kind of nod at me, or so I thought. So one day I heard that knock at the door again, and there stood Olga, of all people, no smile, as usual, but she says, "I make," and she thrusts a plate into my hands and disappears. And on that plate, there were some kind of homemade potato dumplings that were really, really good. So a couple of days later, I knocked on her door to return the plate and thank her. And she said, "Come in, come in." And she brought me into her little apartment, which was kind of the mirror of my own apartment, but it was different. It had all these little wooden dolls sitting on the tables and some porcelain pieces, some that were chipped, but they were all sitting up on high shelves. And she says, "Have coffee." And I knew I was to sit and drink this thick, dark coffee that she made. And so as we sat, she began to talk. And her English was actually more extensive than I had thought. And the words really started to pour out of her very matter-of-factly. She spoke of where she'd come from. She spoke of the soldiers that had come in the night. She spoke of the prison camp and the family she would never see again. She spoke of the way her leg had been stepped on and it never quite healed properly. She spoke of trying to go back to the village where she had her home originally, but the village was no longer there. And I was just 19 at the time. I had no idea what to say. And finally, I said, How did you carry on?" And I'll never forget this. She looked at me for a long moment and then took a sip of that coffee. And then finally she said, "It's good coffee." I've always remembered that. How do you go on? How do you carry on? It's good coffee. wasn't just a declarative statement, it was the answer to my question. And things are rough right now. We know that, right? We've gathered here this morning feeling so devastated by what we've witnessed this week, what the network of people that we know, maybe some in this room, have experienced directly or indirectly. We turn on the news, we see destruction, we mourn the loss of property, the loss of the natural landscape affecting countless plants and animals, the loss of human lives. Just yesterday, we started our Love at the Center class on Zoom, and it was a wonderful time to be together, and there's still room for those who'd like to join us coming up in 2 weeks. But we had some time to talk to each other about the losses affecting our lives, and each person in that group had something to share. And the other thing I remember during these times is what Mr. Rogers used to always say. Do you remember what Mr. Rogers would say about these times? Look for the helpers. Do you remember that? Look for the helpers. Look for the helpers. Way of finding our center when the world is figuratively, or in this case, actually on fire. But looking for the helpers and noticing when the coffee is good requires something that is really, really tough at this time. It asks us to stay in this moment, to not disconnect out of despair, but to remain engaged in some way. I know that being in the moment sounds counterintuitive right now. I mean, why on earth would we want to be here in this moment? Doesn't make a whole lot of sense intellectually. As hard as it is to watch the fires, I'm finding it almost harder to watch the people who aren't those helpers that Mr. Rogers talked about. The armchair critics, some who have global stages, who point fingers and try to lay blame on people, using this moment as a political wedge rather than an opportunity to really rally all of us together, which is what we need. I mean, who wouldn't want to disconnect from what's been happening around us, especially as we begin this year with some well-earned fears and trepidation on the eve of leadership transitions in this country? You know, we were talking before, Louise and I, about the mystic and scientist, right? And if we think about this in scientific terms, we can think of our brain's prefrontal cortex, and that's the control center for our emotions. And when we're hit with excessive stress, as we have been this week, that area of our brain can essentially shut down, making it hard to think clearly and connect with a wider range of possibilities. I know my spouse and I have been having conversations all week that he's talking about something, I'm talking about something, we're not even talking about the same thing. You know, we're on different pages. It's sort of hard to be together in this moment. But I think that even as these fires continue around us, we have the opportunity to create new neural pathways by widening our focus, making room for more than just fear, sadness, and images of destruction. As much as you and I would like, we can't control these fires. Not the ones that are actually happening here in Southern California, and not those metaphorical ones out there in the world, the wars, the conflicts, the unrest. But what we can have control of, to a certain degree anyway, right now in this moment, is our response. That's what we've got. In his book, Man's Search for Meaning, remember that book by Viktor Frankl? He was a Holocaust survivor. And he says that we don't actually invent meaning in our lives. He says instead that we detect meaning through focusing on the moment we're in. Whatever may happen in our lives, our job is to then discover meaning through how we respond to it. When we think of determining meaning in life, we often think of it as something overwhelming. But Frankl says that that act of detection, of discovery, is small It's specific. It requires us to be in the moment, savoring the joy of a good cup of coffee, whether we are in the middle of a pandemic, a war, or a fire. Frankl writes that of his fellow concentration camp prisoners, sensitive people who were used to a rich intellectual life may have suffered much pain, but the damage to their inner selves was less. They were able to retreat from their terrible surroundings to a life of inner riches and spiritual freedom. In other words, the prisoners had the power to shape how they internally received the experience of the camp, even though they had no power to shape its external realities. You know, and that's a good thing about hope. We get the choice to find it or not. When life is hard or challenging, we have every excuse not to look for it. But Frankl writes, the experiences of camp life show that humans do have a choice of action. We can preserve a vestige of spiritual freedom, of independence of mind, even in such terrible conditions of psychic and physical stress. In other words, we usually have the choice to look for hope or not. So I'm reminded of this story. A man comes into the house. He's visibly shaken, upset. And his wife says to him, "What, honey, what's the matter?" And he says, my wallet is gone. I'm pretty sure I put it in my inside coat pocket." And she says, "Well, did you look in your pants pocket?" And he says, yeah, the wallet isn't there either." And she says, "Well, how about the side pocket of your jacket? Have you looked there?" And he says, "Of course not. Do you want me to lose the last bit of hope that I had?" Now, what Frankl's saying is actually the opposite of that. We keep looking for hope. We look in that side pocket, because if we do, we're going to find it somewhere. It's there, waiting to be discovered. I think back to Olga, that woman that I knew so long ago. Life had been so hard for her, and it was the acknowledgement of life's simple gifts that got her through it. That walk to the grocery store, that good cup of coffee. To be in a moment asks us to savor what we find in life, to feel the holiness, if you will, of a given moment, even as that moment may provide challenges. Viktor Frankl says, "We who lived in concentration camps can remember the men who walked through the huts, comforting others, giving away their last piece of bread. They may have been few in number, but they offer sufficient proof that everything can be taken from someone but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way." I love that example because it also shows that our response can be rooted in compassion to others. That may be where we discover what it is that we're looking for, that meaning. We can be those helpers that Mr. Rogers talked about. Maybe we're not going to be those actual firefighters or emergency response teams, but maybe there are other ways that we can be a healing presence right now, even just within our own immediate circles in our lives. You know, within the sorrow of this week, I found myself having some gratitude for some things, like Olga's memory popping up. I felt gratitude in a week that I was also feeling such chaos, anxiety, fear, sadness. Reverend Nancy MacDonald Ladd wrote about it in a poem I want to share with you. She says, "I'm over here making soup while the world is burning. And I can't find the can opener or the garlic mincer or the tools of the master or the two-state solution or comeuppance for the mad king and his fawning minions. I cannot even find life nor liberty nor the pursuit of happiness, which comes after the other two and is so far removed from those fighting for the aforementioned life and liberty as to be a sort of dream of imagining. I also cannot stop the fires or even clear the traffic. So I am making soup and carrying on, though making no promises just yet about the keeping calm. I am over here making soup, and wait! There is a can opener by the spoons to stir the pot, and I am writing words and beginning again while the world is burning. Reverend Nancy talking about soup, about how life carries on even in the midst of tragedy. Sometimes we have to focus on what we can. It reminds me of Olga and her coffee. And as I got to know Olga better, I learned that she had lived there in West Hollywood during the height of the AIDS crisis. And she told me all about the people who lived in the building, mostly gay men who had died during that time. She told me about the beautiful shag rug that had once been in the middle of the living room of my apartment that she'd seen when she went to a candlelit dinner party there with someone who was no longer on this earth. And that period of grief and loss, even after the unimaginable losses she had come from before, she had weathered that too. She'd weathered it, not filled with platitudes or some surface optimism, but with a hard grip on reality and the present moment. The ability to hold some gratitude for something as small as a cup of coffee, for the ability to make a pot of soup. And look, I know this morning my words are just a few words scattered into the winds of everything that's happening here. They don't solve everything, but to find some space for gratitude, even in the complexity of this moment, can reconnect us to hope. And it is hope that sustains us so that we can be part of that group of helpers who, beyond the fires, beyond the rubble, beyond the temporarily broken hearts, can begin to help offer healing in a world that is so very hungry for it. It's good soup, it's good coffee, and it's good to be together.